Blog Talk Radio.
What up, people? This is Speaking Like You Thinking Radio. I'm your host, Naj. Tonight, I'm joined by guest hosting with me until he has to break out to catch the new movie is my man, Chandler Knight. Find him on Twitter, KnightChandler7. That's KnightChandler7, where you can catch more of his views about sports and life out there. But, yeah, this is Naj once again, early in the game for a Friday night. Just going to hit y'all with a quick light show, 1 hour. Chandler, are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up, man?
Well, you know how it is, man. Trying to get a show in on Friday night. It's hard to track everybody down, man. But Chandler's ready to go. So it's all good. So I ain't got to do too much looking and searching. But, look, man. Even on a slow news day, man, you can still put something together. That's the way sports is now. Not only because we have so much information, we got a lot of ridiculous people, man. And ridiculous people not only give you something to talk about, but they also give you a way to kind of put people on game to certain things that are going on. And also kind of challenge them on some of the things that they think. Now, Chandler, I usually don't do this, man. Usually I go straight sports first, and then we work our way into other topics, man. But just the tweet that you sent out the other day and me thinking about this particular person made me say, we got to go with this first, man. And I'm talking about Stephen A. Smith and what he did the other day. Can you give a breakdown on what we found in that story about Stephen A.?
Well, I mean, you know, I saw the tweet that got put out and then what was said by a person who was there, mind you. And now Stephen A. Smith has been making money, you know, going out of school, speaking, and everybody wants to give him these honorary degrees and all this other BS, okay? Like he's actually done something to earn any of this, but I won't get into that, okay? Because yeah. You talk sports from ESPN, suddenly you're qualified to go tell people how to live. Really? But anyway, you know, I'm just saying, man. He went to, I think, the University of South Alabama, and he told the group of students he was speaking in front of, which I'd say probably more than likely predominantly black, that racism doesn't exist for them, that there are white people struggling too. Now, you know, I'm just going to let that marinate for a few seconds. When we think about Baltimore and Missouri and New York and L.A. and Arizona.
Michigan,
Detroit. I mean, you just said Michigan as a whole, but you're going to say Detroit, Flint. Racism doesn't exist for them because there are white people who are struggling too.
And then the kicker, you're not being lynched. As if that's a metric to measure anything by. Well, it ain't as bad as it could be. It ain't the worst.
It's like, well, yeah, they took your house, But at least you got a tree to sleep under. I mean, really? So it's levels of it now. They should be grateful that instead of being able to be lynched in the street, they can just be shot because right. The bullet's quicker. You know what I'm saying? It's less painful, I guess. You know? This guy, and then, you know, Howard Bryant decided he wanted to speak on an example of racism, so I just went after him and said, but you got nothing to say about your boy. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. So I told him. He still hasn't responded. That was, what, 2 days ago now?
Yeah, he came back with crickets on that one. And look, I like Howard. I think Howard does good work. But, I mean, point blank, period. I mean, he was talking out both sides of his mouth in that instance because he was talking about the fact that Cam Chancellor wasn't, or I don't know if he meant Cam as a whole, but just that story about how people weren't being vocal about what Cam Chancellor was going through and why it happened. And it's like, okay, you can say that, but then at the same time, you know, your colleague over here, we understand talking about another ESPN personality, that's, you know, that's a problem for your paycheck. But don't ask other people to be courageous and risk theirs if you're not going to risk yours. And your tweet at him, I mean, it just, you know, it just kind of hit that right there.
I mean, I was very polite. I was very respectful because, see, the reason he responded to me, because we've been arrested on Twitter before. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
He's responded to me on Twitter before. We've had conversations on Twitter. So it's not like the first time I ever tweeted him. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So for him to do what he did, I lost a lot of respect for the man, you know, because I'm going back and forth with quite a few of these so-called entertainment journalists now, the Howard Bryants and the Jason Whitlocks. And not for nothing, Howard Bryant had no problem going after Jason Whitlock, which I don't have a problem with because Jason Whitlock's a fat bag of crap. But you didn't have a problem going after Jason Whitlock. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So why can't you have Stephen A. Smith? And Stephen A. Smith has been selling out for the longest. And the fact that just now our young black youth are starting to realize how much of a phony and a fraud and a sellout this man is, they're just now starting to realize it because he exposes himself every day as a misogynist and as a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
I'm watching some the other day
that,
and he wants to keep commenting on the.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say, he's playing that game of, he's being presented as the black voice or the black opinion on that raggedy show that they do every day, him and that other person. And what he's actually doing is talking to middle America. He's not talking to black people, honestly. He's talking to middle America, and he appeals to their sensibilities, and he says what they like. And that generally is what keeps the ratings high and keeps him in a favorable position to continue to make huge amounts of money on that network. Like, that's kind of the way that game is played if you know how to do it. And if you really are willing to not care about the repercussions that other people have to go through from what you're doing. And also, I mean, if you just don't have a soul, I guess the best way I could say it. But that's the game he's playing.
Yeah, and see, the thing, and you know, he claims he has daughters, and he's, you know, every time he gets a chance, he likes to make a remark about women and somebody's wife. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it makes me really uncomfortable, and it's coming up as creepy as hell. You know, they were talking about the whole nonsense with LeBron, and he's like, oh, his wife goes to that gym, and man, let me just say, and he did a good job. So why do you need to say that the man's wife is fine? Why did you need to say that? You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
What are you really saying here, man? You know, it's just, this dude is just doing some real, real shiesty, grimy, shady, sellout things, man. And you know, we all know it's going to catch up to him. And when it does, he better not jump up and say, oh, they're coming after me because I'm outspoken and I'm black.
Oh, man. Yeah, if he comes with that defense, man, that is going to be really, really sad and really, really paper thin, and people are going to laugh at him. But sadly, he, like you said, he fooled a lot of people, so some people will come and try and support him, not knowing what this dude is really about. Fox News correspondent as well, and when he tried to dip his toe into the political forums. But, yeah, just watching this whole thing with Stephen A., man, that was extremely disgusting. You got young college black students who are, you know, hoping to hear from somebody who's a little older with a little experience, who's attained some success in life. And instead of inspiring people, he's telling people basically that you all are special and the people who haven't made it to where you are failures, and don't let them make excuses for it. When it's like, it's not even about looking for excuses. It's just about living life and also dealing with reality as it is. Not trying to cover up anything, not living a life of fantasy and trying to act as if the world is different. No, you face the world as it is, you know, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, am I still living in Bed-Stuy? No. Am I living now in a place where, look, I don't have to lock my car, although I'm also living in a place where the demographic is 0.1% black. Now, that's not saying I could live in an all-black community and have that happen. So do I still have to deal with some of the stuff on a daily basis that I've had to? No, not on a daily basis, but maybe now it's just every other day. Does that make it okay that it's only every other day? Should I be grateful that it's only every other day? No. The game is still rigged. The fact that I've learned the rules that they're using to cheat me, okay, doesn't change the fact that the game is still rigged. Doesn't change that. I know that you got four aces up your sleeve. I understand that. And I understand the majority of hands I'm going to lose. So I have to maximize my winnings when I get a hand that I can win.
Yeah. No better analogy than that, man. No better analogy than that. And the thing about it is, it's not about crying, complaining, or anything. Like I said, it's just facing the world as it is. And when people tell you things like this, what they're actually getting you to do is get out here into the real world with a fantasy mind state that is not going to help you in the long run. Because once you come up against some opposition or some trying times, you're going to fold, because not only were you not prepared, you didn't think what could come was possible. And that's the kind of thing that he's teaching. And it's just a horrible thing to tell the college students, in my opinion. So Stephen A. Smith proves once again who he is. He's similar to Whitlock, but I would say not as clever. But also, look, man, he's just not as good at it. You know what I mean? Like Whitlock can get away with a lot because Whitlock is clever. He can figure out ways to, you know, cut a dime in half and tell you it's two quarters. He can get away with it sometimes. He's good at it. Stephen A's not. It's ham-handed. It's often, you know, caveman-like, especially like you talked about when he starts talking about women. And for some reason, they've decided that they're going to prop this dude up, and he's been able to survive some things that have gotten other personalities fired. So somehow he's made it happen. But either way, deplorable comments from him. I can't respect it. I'll give you the last word on Stephen A.
Every time I hear him talk, well, it's two things. One, he's not from New York. So people, please stop letting him tell you that lie. And if you don't believe me, if you ever run into him, ask him where Nostrand Avenue is, and he won't know what the hell you're talking about. Okay? If you're from New York, you know where Nostrand Avenue is. That's one. And two, whenever I hear him talk, remember the character on Living Color? My man that was locked up in jail and just read the dictionary every day. And he said, you know, see what it is? We got to flagellate the copulation of the hemorrhagic module. You know what I'm saying? That cat, that's all I hear when I hear Stephen A. Smith talk.
Yeah, man, the word of the day for no reason. I'm going to use a difficult word when an easy one would, you know what I mean, would do. Yeah. Definitely, man. Nothing else to be said about that dude, man. We can keep it moving after that, man. But it's sad to see that. Now look, Chandler, I got you on, so I got a couple baseball topics. Cause I said I got to find some baseball stuff for Chandler. This is not going to be one-sided, but you know, with baseball, sir, you will be batting leadoff and cleanup. I'll just put it like that. The first one I got for you, though, man, look. We know how A-Rod is. A-Rod, he's a different kind of guy. He wanted to present himself as a golden boy. Nobody accepted it, and they kind of, you know, he's gotten a lot of flack over his career. No matter what, I think people will respect him when it's all said and done as a player. But I do got to say this to you, though, Chandler. When he's done playing and we just put some time and distance away from all of the things we know about him as far as the bad things and the bad press and just some people who just don't like the guy, will he be one of those respected guys at that point and people say, look, A-Rod, you know, put him up there with anybody you want to name, the numbers, the play, the ability, all of that is there. You're a Yankee guy. So I'm asking you, does A-Rod just need time to become the legend that his on-field play has produced?
No. And I've always been an A-Rod guy. I've never been a Jeter guy. I was an A-Rod guy when he was in Seattle. I always thought that he was one of the best players I'd ever seen or heard about, and I've heard about a lot. I thought that he far and away was better than Derek Jeter in every aspect of the game. It was a popularity contest that Derek Jeter won because Alex Rodriguez was just so much more talented than the other players, and he is so insecure in himself that in trying to curry favor, he came across as phony. Okay, fine. We've all met them insecure cats. We all have one of them as our friend. Okay, and you learn to just understand the fact that, listen, this cat is just sensitive, man. Just, you know, ignore some of the stuff he says. All right, he's just too damn sensitive. But because he was so much more talented than everybody else, there's a level of jealousy that, you know, I haven't seen in a while in baseball. You know, I mean, a while. And that same level of jealousy is everything you hear about Bryce Harper, you heard about Alex Rodriguez. Every negative thing that you hear about Bryce Harper, you heard the exact same things about Alex Rodriguez. So even when he's gone, they will always qualify what he's done and say, yeah, but you know, he yelled on the field or he took his shirt off in Central Park. You know, Curt Schilling is basically a proud racist and xenophobe.
Yeah.
And you can't get anybody to say one word negative about that man. Okay? He just said that the Secretary of State should be killed and buried.
Yeah, but the bloody sock, though, Chandler. But the bloody sock, though.
Yeah, exactly. The bloody sock. You know what I'm saying? So, no, A-Rod is always going to be denigrated and derided. And those who are able to ignore the noise and look at what he's done, just look at what he did this past season. This is coming off two hip surgeries and a year away from the game.
Nobody.
He is 270, 30 home runs, close to 100 RBIs. First of all, that's hard to do when you're 20, much less when you're 40. That's how much talent that man has and had, that he could do that at the advanced age in sports that he is as a 40-year-old.
And who did he train with as far as batting this offseason, before the season last year? Who did he train with?
Oh, he's worked with a lot of guys. He works with Pete Rose a lot, works with Barry Bonds a lot. He'll sit down with Barry and just talk baseball. And that's the other thing that people have always neglected to mention about him. This guy is, in baseball terms, a gym rat. He watches baseball. He talks baseball. He loves the game of baseball. He's a historian of the game of baseball. This is a guy who takes young players and says, hey, let me show you how to work out. Let me tell you what the thought process should be when you're sitting up there as first and third and the count is 2-0. You take that pitch. Why? Because the same pitch, you see 2-1, you see 2-2. All of those little tips and tricks, that's what he does.
Yeah.
And he's never gotten credit for it. Derek Jeter's never done that.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, too, to kind of follow up on that, then. In your opinion, was the character of Derek Jeter and just, like you said, the confidence and just the man that Derek Jeter is, was that too much in the sense that he didn't give up that shortstop slot to A-Rod when he came over? Do you think he should have given it up, or do you think Jeter played it the right way in, I'm the captain, you find a slot over there, you fit in where you fit in?
I think Judas should have gave it up, and I think a real captain would have.
Mm.
Just as Alex Rodriguez, when he went to the Texas Rangers, was willing to change positions for Michael Young, who had no pelts on the wall. Okay, Michael Young changed positions, but Alex was willing to change that because he didn't want to disrupt what was going on there. Okay, People forget that when he went to Texas, he was willing to play second base so that Michael Young would not have to move from shortstop. Alex was the one who volunteered to move so that they did not even have to ask Jeter to move. He volunteered. It wasn't as though like they asked Jeter. But see, Jeter should have been the one to say, no. He's a better shortstop than I am. But he didn't because of his arrogance and because of his pettiness. Derek Jeter is one of the worst captains in Yankee history as far as I'm concerned. Period.
Whoa. I did not expect that. And that's a tough thing when a guy, like, I don't want to say he's built on intangibles, but intangibles are a huge factor in how you measure a guy like Derek Jeter. And when that's the case, yeah, you can easily see something like that creeping in of, you're not taking my shine. And let me let you know how the pecking order goes here.
What is tangible? See, everybody wants to say, well, Jeter was the reason we won. No, he wasn't. Bernie Williams was. And Tino Martinez was. And Paul O'Neill was. And Rock Raines was. Okay? And Prince Fielder was. Not Prince Fielder. Cecil Fielder was. The list goes on. Because when all of those players left, and the only one left was Jeter and Posada, how many championships did we win? One. When Paul O'Neill and Scott Brosius and Bernie Williams and all of those guys left, we won one championship with the great intangible Derek Jeter, the great leader. And every single player that came to this franchise as a free agent got blamed for losses except Derek Jeter.
Oh, yeah. He was Teflon in that city, man. Definitely. And which is one of the hardest things you could ever pull off in that city. Now, let me go to the line real quick. We got somebody, 203. I don't know if you're just listening, but I'm going to check you out and see if you want to speak. 203, you're on the line. You just want to listen or you in?
Good evening.
Oh, indeed, my man. Now we hear from the host of Sports City Chefs. You can find him on Twitter at Sports City Chefs. And you can also find my man on Twitter himself. TP Timeless?
Yes, sir.
Please spell your Twitter handle for me because I don't have it in front of me.
TPTYMELESS. TPTYMELESS.
There we go. @TPTimeless. I was just talking with Chandler and we were closing out on this Yankee section here. Did you want to get in or you want to move on to the next topic?
I just caught the very end of it, and I know he pressures the Jeter situation a lot. It's an interesting conversation, and he always has a good standpoint, so I can't battle it. So I don't know where it was driving to. I just heard him say more or less a situation of how they pulled the reins away from Jeter. So I don't know where it was going. So
Okay. No question. This is the debut of TP Timeless on this show. I've spent many an hour on his show, respectfully. So I'm glad to have him come over and check out Speaking Like You Think It Radio. So we're going to get into a few more things, man. And Ty, since you're here, you know I got to go to you on this. This is down in my neck of the woods, but this story is crazy. And we're going to see if there's ramifications going forward for all NFL teams. Ohio State cornerback Eli Apple today, while going through an interview with the Falcons, he's a first-round graded corner. Falcons interviewed him. And one of the coaches asked him if he liked men and alluded to the huge gay population in Atlanta. Mr. Apple made it known that they asked this ridiculous question. and people are highly upset. The Falcons have apologized. We got to see what the NFL is going to do going forward. But this is a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. You cannot discriminate on the job based on somebody's sexual preference or religion or race or age. I mean, Ty, what do you think of this? Like the fact that somebody felt that comfortable where or felt that powerful where they could ask this dude that in the interview?
That's a very, you know, heavy situation, and I never thought it would get to this point. But, wow. And just like you said, because knowing that the population of how, you know, the sexual preference is down there in Atlanta, I mean, it's eyebrow raising to a certain extent. But just like you said, I don't think it's a situation where the NFL or the employer, whichever team it may be, should be able to prowl through people's sexual preference. But I think now, to today's day and age, everything is, and I hate to say it like this, is sexually driven. Everything is sexually driven, whether it's people's sexual preference or them getting too close with somebody else, or you know, I think it's more or less a situation where everybody's focus is on that, and I think they're more or less making sure that they're comfortable with the guy in the locker room, you know, a game-by-game, you know, night-by-night situation, because I think that's more or less a situation where a lot of these guys are comfortable at the end of the day. And, you know, I feel sorry for a guy like Michael Sam that could have had potential to play in the NFL, kind of was blackballed in his situation. Now you have this situation arising, and it's going a separate way because it blew up in their face. So this is a very heavy situation that they're going to have to deal with all across the board, not just in Atlanta, but from every team within the league.
Did y'all hear that man walk that tightrope? Did y'all hear that man walk that tightrope? First question, that grenade, he handles it like a pro. TP Timeless, man. Respect the dude. Chandler, how do you look at this, man?
Well, one, they broke a couple of federal laws because it is illegal in a job interview to ask certain questions. So they broke a couple of federal laws, first of all. Second, what that says to me is that the scouts and the information that they've gotten, somebody has put that out about that young man. Because you don't ask that. Listen, the only time you ask a cat or a young lady if they're gay is if you think they are, because you've heard it from somebody. So rather than beating around the bush, you just ask them. You understand what I'm saying? So that you can get it out of the way and say, oh, okay, so if I want to hook you up with somebody, I know who to hook you up with. Okay? That's the only reason you ask that question. So the first thing that said to me was that word is out about him, whether it's true or not. That's the word that's out there about him, which was why he was asked the question. It has nothing to do. Now, they could say, and the guy tried to clean it up, I said, well, you know how Atlanta is, this, that, and the other. That's not what it is. The fact that they're doing things like that to these young men is unconscionable. And I'd be willing to bet he's not the only guy that got asked that question. He's just the only one that said something.
He's just the only one that said something. Right. And that's the other hammer on this is, if you get out and say that you didn't like a question in the interview, how many teams drop you on their draft board and say, oh, okay, this he's a locker room lawyer, or he's going to talk to the media, or he's going to do this? At what point do you think that knocks you down a few notches in the mind of some franchise when they saw this story today?
Yeah, it did. So, it absolutely did. They just hurt that man's draft stock. And some teams do stuff like that intentionally, because they want to draft you, but they want to draft you in the fifth round instead of the third round, so they don't have to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things wrong with this on so many levels. Not just who gives. First of all, I don't give a damn who you sleep with. Let me be real clear. I don't care. Okay, you can bring a pony, a midget, a blow up dog, and a bear in the room. I don't care. As long as you ain't asking me to come join you, we good. Do you? Okay, it don't matter. Do you?
Can you press the wide receiver at the line of scrimmage? Can you move your hips and get down the field and cover? Worried about
you know
the cornerback.
Depending on how sexually adventurous you are, your hips might be real loose. I don't know. Maybe you're real flexible. I might want to draft you. Oh, you like to hang from the trapeze? Hell, I can use you. I mean, you can really flip your hips and go. I mean, come on, man. It's getting ridiculous. And the way that you know, the whole NFL combine, I don't like it anyway because it takes me back to the slave market where they stand there checking their teeth and saying, this is good young buck. You know, that's what it puts me to mind of every time. I'm sorry. That's what it puts me to mind of. They treat these young men like animals.
Right.
Yeah, and before we move on, Ty, is there something else to be said about the power dynamic of the arrogance of people in the NFL because it's such a coveted position to be working for the NFL for a franchise of I got this guy in front of me. He wants this job. He's willing to do anything, say anything. He know he has to behave. So I can ask him anything I want. Circle back to that Miami interview where a young man was asked if his mother was a prostitute. Is there a power issue going on here, an ego issue?
First and foremost, I can't stand him, but I love him to death because he'll hit on those situations that that people just won't touch. It is right on target. Of course, it's a power situation because they have the money that could actually clean the situation up or get it swept under rugs. I mean, they've done it for years, and what can people do? At the end of the day, they hold the answer of people getting these jobs at the end of the day. Just like he said, it's kind of like they're standing on the stump or standing on a soapbox or standing on whatever to be, you know, the spectacle in front of these people's eyes. And just like he just said, Chandler nailed that 1,000%. I know you don't like when I say 1,000%, but it's more or less a situation where teams are like, you know what? Well, if that question raises an eyebrow and then he's causing controversy, well, back off him, and then that'll give them another round to pick who they wanted to pick or whatever, and he'll be right there again, kind of like, you know, we're sorry about the situation. So, again, at the end of the day, the situation, they are the powers that be in that situation, and I mean, what could they do? Everybody's dream is to, you know, play something professionally, do something that they love, that they've done since they were children up until this point. And,
right.
You know, and you can't really be pissed off about the situation because you want to play, you want to perform. But when they're violating you and you know that, you know, this is going against your ethic or so on and so forth, it's terrible, man. It's a very bad situation.
Yeah, agreed. We got a caller calling in 111, so I don't know what this number is. Could be a troll. If it is, it'll be the first troll of this show. So I might as well deal with it if it is. So, gentlemen, please, hold for a second. Let me see what this is. 1111, you're live.
Hey, guys, just wanted to give a shout-out to my niggers, Thank You, Pete. Yeah. My niggers, Slashaw Steve.
There we go.
That's interesting. First troll. I hope you feel good about yourself on a Friday night, the fact that you call into a sports show to say the N-word. Please get some courage about yourself and go find the biggest dude you can tomorrow and say those same words to him and see how he responds.
You can better get at me on Twitter, and I'll give you my address, and you can come to my house and say it to me in person.
Oh, there we go. See?
Wow.
People like to think it loves the kids, even the crazy racists who call in on a Friday night with nothing else to do. But back to the show. Love how y'all
listen, man. Just in reference to that stuff, like you know, get used to that situation. It's bad that it's 2016 and this stuff is still relevant, man. It just, you know, kind of going off topic, kind of going away from sports, but I just seen, you know, something very crazy. A young lady at a Donald Trump event, and it looked like a 1950 event. Like the whole aura, people were pushing her around, getting her out of the way, and making sure she was leaving. And I was just like, Jesus, even if she's a Democrat or she may be African American, nothing has changed. It's just been masked up until this point. And not that I know that that person, and who knows, he could be that way or not, or it's funny that 2016 and this is the way that the world is. It's sad. It is.
Well, sir, the good Lord didn't stop making dumb people, man. So that's just something we're going to have to deal with. But we're going to keep it moving. You know how it goes, man. And I want to address something to y'all that I heard today on Dan Levitard's radio show. Shout out to them, doing the good work that they do. They had on Scott Pollard, if y'all remember him from Kansas fame, journeyman NBA center. You know what I mean? He had more than a cup of coffee in the league. He earned somewhere around $36 million during his career. Right now he's on the TV show Survivor. And he talked about, because it was $1 million on the line, why wouldn't he do it? And he talked about some of the financial difficulties he's come across. So immediately, you know, fans got upset. Oh, you're an NBA guy. You made all this money. You know, don't be on here crying because you made bad decisions. Now, you know, I've always kind of sided with that opinion when we discuss some people who made huge amounts of money. And Pollard, I mean, you could hear it in his voice that he got kind of upset that people think that you're just a dumb guy who blew some money. So we started going through some of the things that happened. So first of all, when they said $36 million, he said that's before taxes. So when they say 36, think 18, because no matter what, you're paying your half in taxes. Then he said he was divorced close to the end of his career, and she got 52% in the settlement, 4% to your agent. Then you have your lawyer, your family, your housing, cars, and investments, which are usually steered to you by your agent or your manager and other people. And he talked about how that money is easily blown, and also the fact that you have to live on it the rest of your life means that just a couple of bad decisions can put you in a real scary place. He said he's not broke. He's doing okay, and he's caring for a lot of people, but it's not what people think it is as far as when you just look at the number and say that guy should be fine. Does that argument from Pollard give you some sort of sympathy or some sort of empathy for it? Or are you still looking at it like you're a moron, you should have figured out a way to budget this in a better way or invest it in a better way? Let me go Chandler first.
I know exactly. Listen, man, there are those of us right now who have family members with their hands in our pocket, and we ain't got no money, okay? And you trying to help your sister and your nephew and your niece, and maybe you got a couple of kids, and you got to take care of them, okay? And maybe you got a significant other. How long does your dollar go? They say, oh, he got millions of dollars, which means he has that many more people in his pocket. Add in the fact that a lot of these cats don't know how to invest, so they're relying on other people to invest their money. All them people aren't always honorable people. Dollar signs make people crooked. So now they're stealing money from him, okay? Then let's say he gets divorced. We all know what we all understand that no divorce, the word amicable and divorce don't belong in the same sentence. They're not in the same sentence, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody's breakup is nice, all right? And if you say it was, you're a damn liar, all right?
Yeah.
You're a liar. So adding the fact that now, especially in certain states, the law says you have to come up off of X dollar, yeah, it's real easy for a guy like Scott Pollard, a journeyman guy, to be in a situation where, yeah, he's not broke, but he's not living the life, you know, in a lap of luxury. He's not, you know, and yeah, I could totally understand it. I wouldn't call a man stupid. I would say that, unfortunately, he trusted some people he probably shouldn't have, and by the time he found out, it was too late. You know, yes. And that happens a lot more than people want to believe. Just because somebody got a lot of money doesn't mean they suddenly know how to invest or manage their money. If I can't add, it doesn't matter how much money you give me. I still can't damn add.
Yeah, no question. Ty, where do you sit on that one, man, with Scott Pollard?
it's a very interesting and tough situation, and a lot of people look at it like, oh, well, if I was in this situation, I would have taken care of the situation better, which we all wish we were in that situation. But, you know, knowing a couple of athletes professionally and knowing them personally, at the end of the day, it's a tough lifestyle to live. It really is. I mean, everybody sees those 6 or 7 digits and, you know, they haven't seen it in their entire life, and they're young, coming fresh out of college, 21, 22-year-old men. You know, the first thing that they do is they get the car and house and make sure that their family life situation is taken care of to the best of their ability, and have to live their professional career. And if they don't, you know, finish at the pinnacle of their career, this is something that they are able to put on or attain toward their resume. So their working relationship, they had a professional job. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, they're always going to have the leg up or their neck out in a situation in corporate America world. So they'll always be able to find a job in a situation. So this is probably why the forefront leader of them getting out there to the Survivor show was able to pick a guy like Scott Pollard. He's 6'11". He's probably still in good condition. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if he has the long hair still or not. That's what I'm saying. If he had the long hair, he'd probably look more fitting to be on an island to just sell the show and be like, oh, it's an NBA player that they all could recognize. So that's something that they probably could. I haven't seen him in a while. I'm just trying to use that as a situation. But, you know, looking at the other side of the coin of this situation is, you know, when they get that money, they have to take care of so much outside of their personal living that is not funny. Like, when they go to a lot of these select cities, that they have to take care of themselves. Like they don't eat on the dime of the team a lot of the times. Like, they take care of themselves or situate themselves on the road to, you know, lodge at select hotel. They have to take care of that as well. So a lot of the money, I mean, of course, they still make a handsome amount of money to be able to pay for that situation. But a lot of that is to making sure that they're taken care of all across the board. It's not like they, you know, a team takes care of them everywhere they go, hotel room, pay for the food everywhere. It's not always like that. So I think it's a situation where I look at it where these teams try to do enough to take care of the player, and then it's a situation where I look toward a player that they should have decent money management skills, but you can't really blame them at the end of the day.
Mm. Yeah. It's a crazy situation, man. And the thing that stood out most to me was at the end of the interview week, he basically said, I'm 41 years old. So the point of it was, athletes don't think long-term for the most part, and neither do the majority of us. But that huge amount of money that you get early on has to last you a very long time because life is long. And when you're done playing, you got a lot of life to go in front of you. The hiccups are from the Coca-Cola. Can't explain it. Y'all just going to have to deal with it. But this is Speaking Like You're Thinking Radio. The hiccuping host holding it down, doing what I can here. But look, man, I don't know, man. I just looked at it like, damn, that's a crazy way to look at it. But shout out to Scott Pollard, man. The dude's not crying. He's still going forward, and he's going to keep pushing in life. And hopefully he figures out a way to do all the things he wants to do, not get all that money back, but get to the point to where he doesn't have any regrets and he's not bitter about it, because that can make you real bitter. And to all of y'all pointing the finger at him, I know some of y'all who get a couple grand back in taxes every year and figure out a way to blow it and then tell me the next year how you're going to be responsible when you get your income taxes this time. So look at your own life before you judge this man. I'll just say that. This next one, man, this is my own personal opinion, so please, anybody out there listening, do not take this opinion as standard for everybody else or as anything anybody else should uphold. But look, man, this new Jesse Owens movie, I'm not going to see it. The movie is called Race. Amazing how they came up with that title. What are they trying to say with that title? Oh, they incorporated everything with that title. They're going to bring up the racial problems during that era, the things that Jesse Owens had to go through, also the fact that he's racing. The thing I'm most scared of is seeing that sad moment of Jesse late in his life where they had him out there racing horses and all of that stuff and some of his political ideas that, you know, didn't turn out too good for him. And the great Jackie Robinson kind of had to lay into him a couple of times in editorials. But I'm tired of people playing on my sentiment and putting out these movies. This was the first black person to do this. This was the first black person to do it. I don't want to see these movies anymore. So I'm not going to see Race. I'm just saying this. Like I said, this is my own personal opinion. So I'll take the lip I have to take for saying this and whatever criticism for saying this. But, Ty, what do you think about that statement? Are you saying it's just a movie, Let It Go? Or, you know, what do you say? You have any interest in seeing it?
I do want to see the movie. It's not like I want to attend the movie theater to go see it, because at the end of the day, they're going to make money off of it. And still, yeah, when I do end up seeing it, it's going to probably be more or less a situation where they're going to make money anyway, whether it's at home or watching it on TV. They're still going to end up receiving funds for it. But it's like now more than ever, everything is being racially driven. And it's just like you said, it's a very interesting storyline that they use that title to address the situation, and they wait to 2016 to address it when they could address this earlier in life. And right at the height of where, you know, a lot of racial issues and tension is happening throughout the U.S. and right in the year of a presidential campaign where we are looking at a racial situation go down with these presidents or at least one of the presidents being elected, and America's actually supporting it heavily, heavily. Like, and I hate to get caught up in the politics and everything, but just think about this. America is backing a racist. Just think about that. And just think about how they are selling a movie that's going to end up being a good seller because both races want to see this. Not even going to lie. You know, black people know the story behind Jesse Owens and how he was a successful runner, and just like Chandler and everybody hit on, you're talented, you're able to go out there, you could be on that soapbox or on that trunk of a tree and stand out there showing your talent, they'll back you. But it could be somebody just as talented and not running or jumping or playing a sport that they won't respect because he's not out there doing it in the same light. And the same way I look at it is kind of like a song that Trick Daddy had. It was a song called America. And if they never heard the song, you got to listen to that song. And even though you're still in the Benz or you're an MVP, you are still one of us at the end of the day. And at one point in time in the commercial, the actor portraying Jesse Owens is thrown up against the wall by the guy that's actually supporting or sponsoring him. I mean, this is from what I saw. I haven't seen the movie yet. And he actually tells him in the midst of the movie that the difference is the difference between their skin colors. So that's the one thing that interests me. I want to see where that goes. So there is some intrigue to me toward it, but it's rough right now that everything is – and those are two interesting topics. It's either racially or sexually driven all across the board, and which way you stand up against these standpoints and how strong can you be in the matter of these standpoints.
I bet y'all didn't know you was going to get a Trick Daddy reference on this show.
I'm sorry.
Chandler, what do you – oh, no disrespect, sir. Just speak like you think it. Bring anything to the table here. Chandler, your thoughts on the movie?
I'm going to give you this. No, first of all, and I'll do this, man. You know, I got to get out of here for the movie. If you don't mind, before I go, I just want to shout out my nephew because he's trying to do something, come up and do something positive. But, no, I'm not going to go see the movie. That scene that they keep showing in the trailers never happened. I read Jesse's autobiography when I was 7 years old. Jesse Owens died broke. He pawned his gold medals. He died broke. He died broke. So, no, I'm not going to go through this movie where they don't deal with that aspect of his life, how after the Olympics he couldn't get a job at General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? No, I'm not going to go see this movie. I'm tired of the, well, at least you're not being lynched anymore mentality that's going on. Because that's really what these movies are about. But see how bad they had it? You don't have it that bad. You got a Galaxy S6. You could go buy a BMW. Life is good. You know, that's really the message they're trying to push down my throat. And I'm not trying to hear it. If you want to know about Jesse Owens, pick up a book. Do your research. Don't go watch this movie and think you know anything about Jesse Owens, because 3/4 of this movie is going to be lies. Lies. Mm. And falsehoods. And made-for-TV crack. Okay? That's what it's going to be.
Drop
the... So, I was
just
going to
say, drop the mic. You just laced them with that hard truth. Much respect to you, Chandler. Have a good time hanging out, you know, with the famo at the movie and everything. Find Chandler on Twitter, man. Definitely follow him. Engage with him. Check him out. Great sports mind. You definitely need to hear from. And that point you just made about them making dramatic scenes that didn't happen, that are racially charged, in order to sell a movie. Man, how low can you go? How low can you go? That is crazy. But, yeah, definitely get at Chandler, man. Thanks for coming on, Chandler. Really appreciate it. Ty, me and you going to shut this baby down, man. We got 10 minutes. Ty, look, this is something I read in the Wall Street Journal today, Ty. I looked at it. I didn't know where to go with it, so I'm glad you're here so I can throw the grenade in your lap. The Wall Street Journal, they did a report on the NFL because they were talking about, you know, the average career based on talent, injuries, and everything else, and, you know, how long people typically stay, the average player stays. Now, in 2008, it was 4.8 years. And since then, it's been 3.3 years. As far as we've, you know, as long as we've talked about it, it's been, you know, average NFL career, 3 years. Well, guess what? This year, the newest study that's been done by the Wall Street Journal says the average NFL career has declined to 2.66 years. So we're talking about 3 years now as an NFL career. That's how violent, how fast, how tough, how hard this game is. Now, y'all better respect these people who go out there on Sunday and put it all on the line. Ty, what does that information say to you, man?
Those are severe numbers, and I would never think that that would actually be the timeline for the sport of the NFL, or the average number around, you know, athletes in the NFL. And, you know, I used to just bicker and get mad about the situation on running backs, and then knowing how the timeline used to be, they say there would be in between 6 to 8 years on running backs within the NFL. And I was like, wait, really? And I started thinking about some of the running backs that went through the NFL. We would get lucky to see guys like Emmitt Smith to give them, you know, 14 years. And lucky he hit behind a Dallas Cowboy line. What if Emmitt played for Tampa Bay? At the time, with Tampa Bay was terrible. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Would he have played 14 years? He played a game with a separated shoulder, and everybody's like, oh, he played a game with a separated shoulder. That game where he played with a separated shoulder, he had holes the size of the Meadowlands. Like they weren't touching him. Like, he was scampering every play. He wasn't juking nobody to get to those situations. And think about all of the running backs that didn't play long careers, like Eric Rett or you know, Craig Ironhead Haywood or – I'm just throwing names out there just to be fun for the situation, and probably ended their career in a 5-7 stint. And now, looking at the lifestyle of a lot of these running backs going through the NFL, either they don't have better judgment, or the viciousness of the sport is what leads them to leave the game at the end of the day, knowing that concussions are at an all-time high. And now you got a player in, let me say it the correct way, an ex-player in Chris Borland that had a monster rookie season, and tapped out and said, you know what, I'm done. And I'm going to advocate against it right after it. Like, just to show you how this of a sport this is, right after I got through collecting a couple hundred thousand or a million. I don't know however the extent of his career or his contract went, but he went out there and put his life on the line for a season for San Francisco and found out that is this all worth it at the end of the day, and now he's an advocate against it. So, you know, I'm an avid fan of football. I can't even sit here and act like I'm going to go against it. I love football dearly, and I respect guys because, you know, at one point in time I had the dream aspirations to be a pro football player, and the college that I ended up going to didn't have football, so it was like that's where that dream stopped. Like, it stopped right when I went to college. So,
right.
You know, you want to see people go out there and do their job and give 5 to 10 years if they can, but just knowing that the number now is at 2.6 is a sad situation, especially in a sport where it's prevalent heavy on one day of the week, really. Like, it took over Sunday on the likes of church and things of that nature.
Yeah, man, because we basically talking about a rookie deal. Basically, you're signing your rookie deal. The majority of the guys who sign that rookie deal will not make it. That's basically it. They're going to get 3 years into that deal, and most of them are going to be cut trying to get onto a new team or out of the game. Like, that's how rough that game is. So, like I said, man, you got to salute these people who are willing to get out there and do it, because I'm sure as hell not. Shout-out to the great Wilt Chamberlain. Around this date, Wilt Chamberlain in 1968 dropped 53, 32, and 14 on the Lakers.
Wow.
I did not stutter. 53, 32, and 14. That's the stat of the day. Stat of the day, man. Come on. 32 and 14. The great Wilt Distilled. But, yeah, man, this is Speaking Like You Think of Radio. We're going to get out of here the next 2 minutes. Ty, thank you for calling in, man, putting in some quick work with me. Slow news day, but somehow we still found some stories to get it done. Is there anything you want to talk about before we clock out of here? I know you talked about your Thunder yesterday. I know you got to drown your sorrows. I wanted some of your MMA knowledge for this Saturday, so I wanted to get into that with you. But please, wherever you want to take it, sir.
Both topics we could touch on. That's all I really have for today was, how the Thunder basically played a great game until – you know, midway through the second half, and it really looked like I don't know if the wheels fell off or Billy Donovan really can't control that situation by himself. I put a lot of that on Billy Donovan yesterday for the Thunder. Going into the half down two, and should have had Russ attacking more, and then Russ settling for outside jump shots when he literally – I really don't see how Curry could beat him, but he more or less – makes it easy for Curry in those situations. And just rotation-wise, it's frustrating to watch this Thunder team be within the game and then blow it. The MMA situation, I do want to see somebody contend with McGregor. I just don't think Diaz can do it. Diaz either wants to box or get on the ground and test a jiu-jitsu situation where McGregor is ready to just go at it on all facets of the fight game. So if Diaz, then I'm going to go, both sides of the coin. If Diaz loses, is what everybody wants to see. The pinnacle builds bigger for McGregor. Everybody, he's a fan favorite. Right now he's making a ton of money. He's an American favorite at the end of the day, and there's so many different channels I could go with that by him being an American favorite and him being the immigrant in this situation. But that's a whole nother situation. But if he loses to Diaz, I want to see the state of the UFC or MMA altogether. If Diaz wins, what, do they coddle him as being the head of UFC or MMA, or do they still keep McGregor on a pedestal and be like, well, he took this fight and he's fighting a heavier fighter, so you still should respect him, this, that, and the third. So I don't know. It's two different ways that I'm looking at this, and I know that they try to save themselves outside of Ronda Rousey losing. Now they have a situation where if McGregor loses, which I doubt that he will, because I don't think Diaz is that type of fighter. I don't think he built for McGregor. But still, yeah, if he loses, that's what I'm worried about. I can't wait for those storylines.
Right. We'll see this Saturday. Todd, thanks for calling. As McGregor told Diaz, dance. Told that grown man to dance. That's how far he took it. Todd, thanks for calling, man. I know we're about to get shut down. But either way, this is Speaking Like You Think It Radio. You will hear from us this weekend. Also, check Ty out on sportscitychefs.com. Hopefully, this still makes the recording. If not, Ty, you know I'll get that shout out correct next week, next show. You know how we do, man. But thanks to Sports City Chefs for coming in tonight. Had Chandler, had Ty. Enjoyed the time. And slow news day, but we still get it done. We out.